Ato mohurta ekasmin. Ato mohurta ekasmin. Nana gare shutastriya. Nana gare shutastriya. Yatopaye me Bhagavan. Yatopaye me Bhagavan. Tavadrupa dharovyaya. Tavadrupa dharovyaya. Ato muhurta ekasmin. Nana gare shutastriya. Yatopaye me Bhagavan. Tavadrupa dharovyaya. Bolo. Ladies, word for word translations, ata'u, and then, mohurte, at the auspicious time, ekasmin, same, nana, various, agareshu, in residences, that's residences, like homes. Ta, those, striyaha, women, yata, properly, upayeme, married, Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, tavat, that many, rupa, forms, dharaha, assuming, avyayaha, the imperishable one. Translation, then the imperishable supreme personality, assuming a separate form for each bride, duly married all the princesses simultaneously, each in her own palace. Please repeat, then the imperishable supreme personality, assuming a separate form for each bride, duly married all the princesses simultaneously, each in her own palace. purport, as Srila Sridhar Swami explains, here the word yata indicates that each marriage was duly performed. This means that the entire company of the Lord's relatives, including his mother, Devaki, appeared in each and every palace and attended each and every wedding. Since all these weddings took place simultaneously, this event was surely a manifestation of the Lord's inconceivable potency. When Lord Krishna does things, he does them in style. So it is not astonishing that the Lord simultaneously appeared in 16,100 wedding ceremonies taking place in 16,100 royal palaces, accompanied in each palace by all his relatives. Indeed, this is the way one would expect the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do things. After all, he is not an ordinary human being. Srila Sridhar Swami further explains that on this particular occasion, the Lord manifested his original form in each of his palaces. In other words, to take part in the wedding vows, he manifested identical forms, prakash, in all the palaces. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master is opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. I thought it would be interesting to look at the way Srila Prabhupada summarized this verse in the Krishna book. And it's interesting that Prabhupada's summary of 10:59-42 is longer than the verse in the purport. Usually you think of the summary as being a condensation. But Prabhupada, he kind of unpacks, spells it out even a little more. So here's Prabhupada's Krishna book version of this. After defeating Indra, Krishna arranged to marry the 16,100 girls brought from the custody of Bhomasur, Naraka, same. By expanding himself into 16,100 forms, he simultaneously married them all in different palaces at the same auspicious moment. He thus established the truth that Krishna and no one else is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is nothing impossible for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is all-powerful, omnipresent, and imperishable. And so there is nothing wonderful in this pastime. Of course, it's all wonderful, but Prabhupada, by that usage of the word wonderful, he means there's nothing unacceptable. All the palaces of the more than 16,000 queens of Krishna were filled with suitable gardens, furniture, and other paraphernalia, to which there is no parallel in this world. There is no exaggeration in this story from Srimad Bhagavatam. The queens of Krishna were all expansions of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. Krishna lived with them in different palaces, and he treated them exactly the same way an ordinary man treats his wife. We should always remember that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was playing exactly like a human being, although he showed his extraordinary opulences by simultaneously marrying more than 16,000 wives in more than 16,000 palaces. He behaved with them just like an ordinary man, and he strictly followed the relationship between husband and wife required in ordinary homes. Therefore, it is very difficult to understand the characteristics of the Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead. Even demigods like Brahma are unable to probe into the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The wives of Krishna were so fortunate that they got the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their husband, although their husband's personality was unknown even to Brahma and the other demigods. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai. Oh. Reading this verse in purport last night was a bit like a homecoming for me, because when I walked in the door of Srila Prabhupada's Boston temple in July 1970, you know what happened? I met Jayadwaita Brahmachari, and he was proofreading the manuscript for the Krishna book for the second edition, because the first edition had just come out at Rath Yatra. Prabhupada was handed the first edition of Krishna book at Rath Yatra by Brahmananda Swami. He had just made it. He'd just flown in from Japan, where Dined Upon printers had advanced him the first few copies, and he even sold one on the plane. And then he handed a copy, the other copy, to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada, he sold that one. So there were none until they got more. So anyway, so Jayadwaita, then Brahmachari, you know, we know as Jayadwaita Swami now, he was he just grabbed me, and he sat me down, and he said, "Okay, you sit in this chair. I'm going to sit in this chair, and you read this manuscript as fast as you can, and I'm going to check that everything you're reading is in this manuscript." And you know what you know what I had to read? I had to read this. It was Krishna. This was my introduction to Krishna consciousness. Krishna, you know, 16,108 forms of Krishna, doing everything differently, simultaneously, in 16,000, you know, 108 palaces. And it was perfect, because, you know, I had been doing psychedelics, and I thought, well, this was rather a very psychedelic experience to read at the top of my, you know, as top speed, not stopping for any punctuation or grammar pauses like I read there. Just brrr, brrr. So it was, I was definitely staying high forever reading that manuscript. So when we come upon, there's always a tension in Krishna's lila, and that's why Prabhupada says at one point, he says, it's very hard to understand the Supreme Brahman, because on the one hand, he's doing things that are materially impossible to do, but on the other hand, simultaneously, he's behaving like an ordinary person, right? He's expanding himself into 16,000 100 to 108 forms. And then, but how is he behaving, you know, in a very exemplary way? So there's always this tension in Krishna's lila between his doing things that are outrageous, you know, by human calculation, and also he does things that are very dharmic, right? That's why in the third chapter of the Gita, Krishna says, whatever action is performed by a great man, common men follow, and whatever standards he sets, he sets by exemplary acts all the world pursues. And then the next verse, if I should cease to work, then all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would also be the cause of unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all sentient beings. In other words, I have to set the example. But sometimes he does things that are totally outrageous too. You know, just to remind us, he's not bound by anybody. He can do what he wants. He's Swarat. He's independent. So this is Krishna. And Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada points out in his Sandarbhas that unless and until we accept that the absolute truth, the source of all, has inconceivable potency, we won't have a clue to understanding what absolute truth means. That's the first thing we have to understand when we approach the absolute truth. The source of all, the summum bonum, jadmadhyasyataha, he possesses inconceivable potency, which we can't measure with our Dr. Frog-like brains. So in this connection, you may recall, we all know the story, but it's sweet to recall, how Prabhupada illustrated this with the little story of the Brahmin and the cobbler. Right? Narada Muni, our favorite yogi, he can go anywhere, right, in the material and the spiritual worlds. So Narada Muni had a daily habit at one point. Prabhupada says it was like a regulation. It's like, you know, we greet the deities and we do Guru Puja. So regularly Narada Muni, he would, as we would say, check in. He would go visit Lord Narayan and Vaikuntha. So everybody knew that, at least at this point in time. So Narada Muni was walking down the road. He was on earth and he hadn't gone to see Lord Narayan yet. So, as you know, he came upon a Brahmin. And the Brahmin said, "Oh, Narada Muni, where are you going?" "Oh, I'm going to visit Lord Narayan." "Oh," as if he didn't know, right? "Now, my dear Narada Muni, would you please ask Lord Narayan when I will get my salvation?" Very pukka Brahmin, you know. So much knowledge, did things very clean, regulated. So Narada Muni said, "Oh, all right, I'm about to go visit Lord Narayan. I will do that for you." Yeah. And then just before he went to Vaikuntha, he came upon, as we know, a cobbler. "Oh, Narada Muni." A humble cobbler who was dealing with shoes all day, you know. It's like we have the shoe seva out here, and then you have the sink where you wash your hands. So, this humble cobbler, "Where are you going, Narada Muni?" "I am going to see Lord Narayan." "Oh, Narada Muni, would you please ask Lord Narayan, my Lord, when I will be liberated from this material life?" "Okay, I will do that for you." So Narada Muni had two assignments, right? So Narada Muni goes to Vaikuntha and he just did it, you know, by his mystic prowess. And goes to meet Lord Narayan, and he thought he would take care of his assignment. There's no time like the present, right, to take care of your assignments. So, first of all, he said, "My dear Lord, I have two questions to ask you. There's two devotees. They want to know, first of all, I met this Brahmin. He wants to know when he will attain his salvation." So Lord Narayan immediately knew which one Narada, you know, because he's in the heart of all simultaneously. So he knew which Brahmin. So he said, "Oh, that Brahmin. You know, I can't tell you when. I don't know." Right? Because it's a two-way street. We have our free will. Man proposes, God disposes. And Krishna will never interfere with that free will. I cannot tell you. Sometime. It's going to be sometime. I cannot tell. Narada Muni, oh, okay. And then there's this humble cobbler. And then the Lord said, oh, tell the cobbler, he's coming home after this life. And Narada Muni was astonished. My Lord, this Brahmin, he appeared to be very pakka, you know? And he's going to, you don't know when, he's going to take some time. And this humble, he's just dealing with all these dirty shoes all day, and you say he's coming home? Really? How is that? So Lord Narayan said, how is that? Oh, well, you will understand. When you go back and you tell each of those people what I was doing, and here's what you say I was doing. Tell them I was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. Tell them that. Narada Muni. What a teaching tactic, right? Oh, okay. I will, and I will understand after I say this. Yeah. Okay. So Narada Muni, back down to earth. Sure enough, he comes upon the Brahmin, and the Brahmin sees Narada Muni. Ah, Narada Muni, did you see my Lord? Yes. What did he say? When will I attain my salvation? No, that's not how Prabhupada told the story. He didn't even ask that question. Here's first, he didn't even get that far. First the Brahmin said this. Oh, you saw Lord Narayan. What was he doing? Oh, perfect question, right? Well, he was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. What? Impossible. Nonsense. I don't have any faith in what you say. I don't even believe you saw him. So Narada Muni, All right. Have it your way. And he goes on, he meets the cobbler. And now Narada Muni is beginning to catch on to what Lord Narayan meant. You will know. Because Narada Muni thought, after that person said nonsense, then Narada Muni thought, this person, he just reads books all day. He's a bookworm. He thinks he knows so much, but he's a bookworm. Then he meets the cobbler. And the cobbler asks the same thing. Oh, Narada Muni! So, you saw our Lord? What was he doing? And Narada Muni, I wonder what he's going to say. Well, our Lord was threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. Wondering now what the cobbler would say. If even the big Brahmin didn't get it, how is this humble cobbler? What is he going to say? Oh, how wonderful! Just see what our Lord can do. Threading an elephant through the eye of a needle. Beautiful! And Narada Muni is astonished. You believe that? You believe that? Oh, the cobbler. But sure. Why not? Narada Muni was curious. How do you believe that? So the cobbler is doing his humble cobbling underneath a banyan tree. My dear Narada, this banyan tree is producing so many fruits. And inside each one of these little fruits, you've seen the banyan fruit, little there's a seed. There's thousands of seeds. And in each one of these seeds is contained a big banyan tree. So what's the problem? And then Prabhupada comes in and he says, after Prabhupada, you know, takes the part of all the, of Narada and the Brahmin and the cobbler. And then so Prabhupada says, so you see, this is the difference between a believer and an unbeliever. It's not the it's not that the believer has blind faith, but his faith is rooted in complete realization of the inconceivable potency of the Lord, which he observes every minute. It's not blind. We should never... In fact, in the purport, Prabhupada's purport to the famous Tadvidhi verse, right? Let's do it. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshanaha. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, and render service unto him. And then Krishna goes plural, upadekshanti, that's plural. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. That's how Prabhupada translates it. In the word for word, he renders upadekshanti as they will initiate. And the translation is they can impart knowledge. The essence of initiation is that transference of transcendental knowledge. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, in this verse, both absurd inquiries and blind faith are condemned. Our faith in Krishna is not blind. It's with eyes wide opened, omagyana. Krishna, the spiritual master, is opening our eyes. And amazingly, here's something even more amazing. It says in the verse, or it says in the purport, that this means that the entire company of the Lord's relatives, including his mother Devaki, not just the Lord appeared simultaneously in 16,100 palaces, but his mother Devaki appeared in each and every palace and attended each and every wedding at the same time. Since all these weddings took place simultaneously, this event was surely a manifestation of the Lord's inconceivable potency. So this is wonderful, because this means that as we surrender, not only are we able to observe Krishna's inconceivable potency, but then Krishna allows us to participate in that inconceivable potency. Do you remember? In Dhruva Leela, right? How Dhruva's been insulted, right? You don't insult a Kshatriya, even if he's 5 years old, you don't insult that kind of, you know, a thoroughbred, heavy-duty, pedigree Kshatriya. So, you know, he went to them, and on the advice of his mother, who couldn't really help him, she said, I think only the Lord can help you, and the sages say that they find the Lord in the forest, so maybe that's what you have to do. And there was Narada Muni again, we say in America, Johnny on the spot. Right? He's always right. Krishna puts him right place at the right time. Dhruva, what are you doing? And then Dhruva tells him his story, and then Narada tries to rhetorically kind of pat him on the head. Dhruva, look, you're only 5 years old. You know, I know you've been insulted and you're a Kshatriya, but why don't you come back when you're grown up and maybe we can do something for you here. So what does Dhruva say? This is very nice instruction, Narada Muni, my dear Lord, for a nice, well-behaved Brahmin boy. I'm not a Brahmin. I'm a Kshatriya. I've been insulted. Whatever it takes, we would say nowadays, bring it on, right? Bring it on. So Narada Muni, whoa, okay, I've got a prodigy here on my hands. And then Narada Muni changed his tactics. He realized who he was dealing with. And he gave them that Ashtanga, rigorous, not the yoga studio of Ashtanga yoga of today, but the real Ashtanga yoga practice, right? The asana and the progressive, you know, giving up of intake and all this. And within 6 months, Dhruva was doing this, you know, what is it saying, Gita? Apane juvati pranam, prane panam tatapare prana panagati rudva pranayama parayanaha apare niyataharak pranam praneshu juvati. And there are others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance, and thus they practice stopping of the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming breath into the outgoing, and thus at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. And Dhruva was doing that so intensely that he was disturbing the life air all over the universe. The demigods came and they said, "Will you please see what this boy wants? We can't breathe." And in the purports to 4, 8, 78 through 80, Prabhupada talks about how when one becomes completely dovetailed, harmonized, in sync with the desires of the Lord, the Lord can do through him inconceivable things. And it's so potent because Prabhupada, of course, he's transparent to Krishna, but he's practically evincing that. He's demonstrating that by, you know, exploding Krishna consciousness all over the world, you know, in a way no one ever has. So it's exciting. Just as Dhruva, you know, by the pressure of his meditation was affecting the whole universe, Prabhupada is showing by his own example the kind of empowerment available for someone who is utterly, absolutely transparent to the Lord. So this is exciting because in our own way, and you probably can tell stories in your own life, how Krishna is using you to do things you could never imagine that you could ever do just because you were agreeing to do it for him. This is why bhakti life is so exciting, because Krishna takes, you know, that script that was there in the stars and then there in our palm, as above, so below, right at our birth. And then he customizes it and he uses it in a wonderful way. That's why Lord Brahma says, Yas tvindra gopa matavindra ahosva karma bandana rupa palabhajana matanoti karma ninirda hatikintu cha bhakti bhajam Govindamadi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami. That from that Indra Gopa germ all the way up to Atavendra, Indra, the king of heaven, we're all being chased by our karma. Wherever I go, there I am. But as we approach Krishna, Yayatamang Prapadyante, Karma Ninirdahati Kintucha Bhakti Bhajam. Krishna takes over that karma and uses it in his service in a way that's unimaginable to us. That's what we have to look forward to as we progressively surrender. It's not just the hackneyed script of our karma that we're living out here. Otherwise, we're just destined to live out this script, you know, the same old, same old. That's why bhakti life is interesting. Okay, it's getting on to late. So I'm going to read the verse again, and if you have any questions or comments... Yeah, okay. Then the imperishable Supreme Personality, assuming a separate form for each bride, duly married all the princesses simultaneously. You have weddings down here, right? Very nice. But Krishna, what does it say? He does it in style. I like the way Ridhananda Maharaj, Gopi Puranadana Prabhu, and Dravida collaborated on that. He does it in style. No, he does it. No one could do it like that. Duly married all the princesses simultaneously, each in her own palace. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Are there any questions or comments?
Prabhu ni.
Got a mic?
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, in the purport, it is said that even the devotees of the Lord, like the parents of the Lord, were also present simultaneously in all the 16,100 palaces. So how do we understand that?
Yeah, that was addressed in the first paragraph. I'll just read the first paragraph again. As Srila Sridhar Swami explains, here the word yata indicates that each marriage was duly performed, properly performed. So it wasn't a rush job. It wasn't that... Anyway, I'll just keep reading. This means that the entire company of the Lord's relatives, including his mother, Devaki, appeared in each and every palace and attended each and every wedding. And it's not that it took forever, right? 16,000. Since all these weddings took place simultaneously, this event was surely a manifestation of the Lord's inconceivable potency. So I tried to answer that by giving that little example of your own life. I mean, as we surrender to Krishna, Krishna really does take over our life, and he has us doing things that we could never imagine. Okay, I'll give you an example. Okay, this is the best way I can answer this. By my karma, I was probably destined to roam the earth. Before I met Srila Prabhupada, one of my favorite little poems was this. Listen to this poem. It's an English poem, which appeared in the New Yorker magazine in 1965, and I liked it. That was just when we started to hit the road. You've read The Journey Home by Radhanath Maharaj? Okay, we were all doing that. Only he had the best story, and it ended up at Prabhupada's lotus feet, so it was great. He had the best story, but we were all hitting the road. So here's the poem. There's a race of men that don't fit in, a race that can sit still. So they break the heart of kith and kin and roam the earth at will. If they just went straight, they might go far. They're strong, they're brave, and they're true. But they're always tired of the things that are, and they want the strange and the new. So, you know, I was also hitchhiking all over the place, like you read in the first part of The Journey Home. And whoever would pick me up, I would say, how can I serve you? What can I do for you? That was my life. I thought that was the highest thing you could do. Just meet people and ask, you know, how you could serve them. I didn't know what the right service was though, right? Now here I am, okay, 1965 I read that poem. Here it is, 2015. That's 35, that's 50 years ago, my God. And I live to tell the tale by Prabhupada's divine grace. Now Prabhupada took that roaming karma. I have a movable sign and a movable, you know, if you look at my jyotish, it's very movable. Right? What is Prabhupada having me do now? In my senior years. He's kicked me out of the house. He's got me roaming the earth, going everywhere with a 10-part seminar called Srila Prabhupada, Our Founder Acharya. It's a 10-part journey from Sambandha to Abhideya through Prayojana, sharing his glories and everyone's foundational relationship with him. This is the perfection of my roaming karma. I could never imagine this. So you say, how can we understand these things? If we could understand it, maybe we'd be God. We can understand it. Dr. Frog, excuse me, we're all Dr. Frogs, right? We can't, unless and until, Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada says, unless and until we accept that the Lord, the source of all, has inconceivable potency, then there's no way we can even begin to relate to the Absolute Truth. We just have to accept it's inconceivable. But it is. But we can observe it as the cobbler observed the tree and the little seed. That's called paying attention. Being a little alert. Everything is miraculous. Everything. That anything exists is miraculous. Once there was a philosopher in Mexico. You can hear this on the recording. And the recording has been named. If you go on the Veda base, you scroll down to audio transcripts, and you click on 1975, and you click on February 1975, and you look at Mexico City, and there's a conversation called, "Why is there anything?" And it was a great title, because that was the question that a Mexican Sanskrit, a lady Mexican Sanskrit professor asked Srila Prabhupada. And she thought, surely this is going to stump Swamiji. Yes. Swamiji, why is there anything? So Prabhupada, he could handle any question, because as I've been saying in the seminar sessions, Prabhupada would not only answer the content of questions, he would answer the intent of the questioner. He could read minds. He knew the mentality. He knew the consciousness of the questioner. And that's why you get 108 different answers to the same questions if you look in the Veda base. Don't be confused by that. Just, you got to know context. Okay, so here's how Prabhupada handled that question. Why is there anything? Better you ask. No, first Prabhupada said, everything is already there.
Everything is already there. Better you ask, from where everything has come. Yeah. Janma yashayataha. The absolute truth is that from whom everything emanates.
And then Prabhupada just, he turns it from this kind of, you know, Zen kind of question, you know, into a beautiful presentation of Krishna. Better you ask. Everything's already here. And that was Prabhupada's basic complaint about modern philosophers and scientists. They always start in the middle. They haven't a clue about the origin, nor have they a clue about where it all, the end of knowledge. They always start in the middle and speculate. You don't, I forget the verse. I love this line from a fourth canto purport. I think it's 4:29:56. A devotee is as thoughtful as a non-devotee is speculative. In both cases, the mind is engaged. What's the difference between being thoughtful and speculative? Thoughtful means that the devotee starts with Krishna. And Prabhupada gave the example. Krishna says, rasa aham apsu. I am the taste of water. So when a devotee tastes water, he thinks of Krishna. Krishna says, I am the taste of water. And he appreciates that taste of water is Krishna, especially if it's water as it is, you know. The quenching power, the sweetness, the mercy, yeah, the purity. A non-devotee takes the same water, you know, tastes it, puts it under his microscope, and always comes out with a conclusion that's impersonal or void. That's called speculative. Devotee is thoughtful, a non-devotee is speculative. So, we're in the middle here. We're obviously the emanation from a source. So, all we have to do is appreciate what the source is telling us. What is it? Yad yad vibhuti mat sattvam srimadurjitam nevava tattadeva vagatshatvam mama teja angsha mama teja angsha sambhavam. Know that all beautiful, glorious, and mighty creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. We just have to appreciate Krishna. We can never comprehend Krishna. Even Rupa Goswami Prabhupada says there's an everlasting competition between Krishna's potency and Krishna's awareness of his potency. As soon as Krishna is aware of his potency, it increases. So this is everlasting competition. So you're asking the question, Krishna's asking too. He's amazed at his own potency. He looks at his image and he can't, it's inconceivable how beautiful he is to himself. He's amazed by his own beauty, by his own... So, that's all we can do. Appreciate wonderful Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Prabhuji.
Yeah. The people who don't have faith on the inconceivable potency of the Lord, how can we preach them? Can you just share about your preaching experience on how the...
Can you say that again in American English?
Sorry.
I have American ears.
Okay. The people, those who don't have faith on the inconceivable potency of the Lord, so how can we preach them?
Who don't accept the inconceivable? People that what? Say
the
it again.
People
slowly.
Okay.
The people. Make believe you're talking to a 2-year-old.
The people who don't have faith on the inconceivable potency of the Lord,
right.
How can we preach them? And can you just share some thoughts about that? How?
It depends on their attitude. It depends. Srila Prabhupada would tell us. Did you understand the question? It took me 3 tries to get it. I'm sorry, I was born that way. I was born right near 26 Second Avenue. And my mother tongue is New York English. And that's hard to understand. I try not to speak New York English. Okay. So how can we... people who don't accept the inconceivable potency of the Lord, how can we persuade them? Of Krishna's inconceivable. So Srila Prabhupada would tell us, before you try to preach to someone, first see if the person is a human being or an animal. Pretty heavy, right? I mean, Prabhupada, he could be so sweet, but so heavy too. So how did Prabhupada define human being? Someone who is able to listen to reason. So, the reasoning power, look, Prabhupada already answered it in the story of the Brahmin and the cobbler. They're both using their reason, but one's using it in a self-centered way, you know, in a Dr. Frog way, right? Is the ocean twice as big as my well? 3 times, 4 times? Did you ever lie, when I was a teenager, I used to lie in my bed and try to imagine infinity. Did you ever do that as a kid? Okay, there's a Western mind. You're in India, you have better samskaras, right? You have samskaras, we have some scars. Right? And so what happened? When you lay on your bed, and you try to imagine, and after a while your mind goes... It's like a car that can't go above, you know, 100 kilometers an hour because there's a governor on it, right? So that's what happens. So the mental speculator is limiting himself by the capacity to speculate. And when he can't speculate beyond that, he just disbelieves it. That's why Lord Brahma, after, he tried to outfox Krishna, right? In Brahma Vimohana Leela, and then he couldn't do it. And Krishna, all the cows, calves, and cowherd boys, it's right out here in the diorama you have. And so then there's a whole chapter of Lord Brahma, you know, praying to the cowherd boy, who now he gets it. Oh, this is the absolute truth. So in 10.14.3, the third prayer, what is Lord Brahma saying, you know? Jnane prayasa mudapasi namante eva jivanti sanmukaritang bhavadiya vartam stane stitakshu dikatang tanuvan manobir ye prayaso jita jito pyasitais trilokyam. Those who give up the process of mental speculation and begin to worship you, Lord. Begin to worship you by hearing authorized descriptions of your glories, your potency, which are, you know, sung by the great devotees of the Lord. they can certainly, and even while remaining in their own stan, this is the line Prabhupada would quote, stane stita trudigatang tanuvan manobi. You can stay in your stan. You don't have to change your position. You just lend an ear to Krishna's glories and stop trying to speculate about what infinity is and the absolute truth. Ye praya so jita jito. Certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. So, Prabhupada would say, first you have to, is the person a human being or an animal? And then you just have to show them that there's different kinds of logic. If you want to have limited logic, limited to your own little mind, you see, that it comes from false pride. That's why they don't accept. They want to think that their Dr. Frog brain is the latest and greatest, you know, example of evolution. We're the latest and greatest edition of evolution, right? Nothing's beyond us. It's just false pride, that's all. So you have to be, you just have to see if the person's a little, it's that false pride that always kills us, you know? Pride goeth before destruction and the fall before a haughty spirit, it says in the Bible. Yeah. It's the irony of it. We're limiting ourselves. Look at the devotional logic of the cobbler. He was able to appreciate so much more. And with good science, good logic. Look, there's a whole tree in this seed. That's good. That's, yeah. So you might start with that. It depends on the mood, you know, on the attitude. Because, what is that? A second, we're trying to come to Madhyam platform, and we don't want to, you know, it's a kind of violence if we're trying to preach the glories of the Lord to the faithless, because it just gives them a chance to blaspheme and offend, and that we don't want to do that. We don't want to hurt them by giving, you know, feeding the fire of their venom. And see what their mood is. And if they're a little open, then you can start pointing things out. As Sir Isaac Newton pointed out to his atheist friend, oh, you like this model of the solar system? Then why don't you understand the whole cosmos is like this. You know, you saw there's an intelligence, right? You know the story of Isaac Newton and his atheist friend. Why don't you see? So, it's all about mood. Prabhuji, one more. It's getting a little late.
So in your lecture, we heard that we have our karma and Krishna interferes and dovetails that karma. So I just had a question about this astrological science which is there. Because we see even in scriptures people are referring to astrology, right? So should we even look at astrology, because whatever is the astrological thing, because we are following this path of bhakti, it is going to be changed, or we should not even look at it?
See, there's a question, and because I'm not Prabhupada, I don't know, you know, your motive in asking the question. Prabhupada was, he could discern motives. Therefore, he would answer your question in 108 different ways. But I can simply say that it depends on your motive. Right? You'll find very, you know, praising statements about the greatest material science, astrology, in Prabhupada's Vani. And you'll find dismissive statements, right, about astrology in Prabhupada's Vani. So utility is the principle. Prabhupada did make use in his own life of astrology. You know, as Prabhupada was circling the globe 14 times in 12 years, he did what he had to do. But when it was possible, he would observe the Rahu Kala. He would avoid traveling on Thursday PM as much as he could. But if he couldn't, he would just trust that Krishna would override that. Just like Prabhupada would said, oh, here's an answer. Here's the one way to answer your question. You know, when Hiranyakashipu was trying to kill Prahlad, in 4th chapter, 7th canto. And then there's a verse where the last line is, or one line of the verse is, Krishnagraha, the Krishna planet. Krishnagraha grahitatma. It's all about Prahlad. You know, he's Hiranyakashipu was trying to kill him in so many ways. But Prahlad was just totally surrendered to Krishna. And so whatever they tried, you know, poison and you know, throwing off a cliff and all these things, it didn't work. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, it is said that when one is under the influence of Rahu, Saturn, or Ketu, one cannot make any progress in life. But because Prahlad Maharaj was under the influence of the Krishna planet, he said, Krishnagraha, Grihitatma. Therefore, he was not affected by this. So, Prabhupada, you can find letters where Prabhupada tells the devotees, so, and also in his essay called the Gita Nagari, which was the first name Prabhupada gave to his mission, even before the League of Devotees, in the wake of Mahatma Gandhi's assassination, the assassination of his boyhood hero, Mahatma Gandhi. This was the trigger for Prabhupada to start formulating his mission. And he was writing government leaders, business leaders, trying to capitalize. Prabhupada was a transcendental opportunist on the assassination of his boyhood hero to convince the government, don't just make a statue to Gandhi where pigeons will pass stool, he said in one letter. I can show you how to make a whole community based on the Gita's teachings, the Mahatma's book of inspiration, where we can really, this is the glory, this is the real glory of India. We can really bring peace to the world. So Prabhupada was calling this community the Gita Nagari, the village where the Bhagavad Gita is sung and lived. And in the Gita Nagari, we will educate the children according to birth tendency and horoscope. Horoscope and birth tendency. So it has some utility in determining the psychology of a child and what his tendencies are. And also in letters you can see Prabhupada saying, so you can consult Jyotish if you can find a good Jyotishi, you know, someone who's competent. That's the trick, right? Either in Ayurveda or Jyotish, finding somebody who can really apply it properly. To make use of it for compatibility. But it depends, but the motive has to be, what is it? Anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. To accept everything favorable, to be used in Krishna's service, to reject everything unfavorable. That's the devotional motive for using astrology. Not so we can, you know, create a paradise in the material world. And that's the lesson of the pastime of King Nriga, right? He was Pukka, you know, Pravritti Margi, right? Progressive, so much charity, so many, you know, following all the Vedas, you know, we would say dotting all his I's, crossing all his T's. But then he made one mistake, and he had to be cursed, right? So that's, it's a fool's game. You know, trying to win in the material world. The house always wins, as they say in Las Vegas. The house always wins. We always get old, we always get sick, and we always die, materially speaking. Right? So, yeah, we can make use of that, but it has to be done you have to really be introspective to know your motive. If your motive is right, if it's samyagya vasito hisa, you have to be rightly situated in your determination and your motive. And then you have to find somebody who's competent. So, is that all right? Okay, we better end there. So nice being here in Chopadi. Everything is so organized, and therefore I'm able to do my work. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai.